There we go. Okay, we are on page 49, the Book of Innocence. And we are looking again at becoming or going past or through what we've been calling in another class anyway, my attachment to my persona, my personality, my who I think I am. And who I think I am is what a lot of people told me I was, what they thought I was. Of course, as Ram Dass reminds us that all those people who were telling us who we were didn't know who they were. But we didn't know that. I didn't know that. So when somebody said something or was a description or an idea about who I was, where do you go with that? I couldn't go back to the source because they would just repeat what they told me to begin with. So it wasn't until probably much later on this, whatever we want to call it, the spiritual path that we are part of, that we began to question whether or not all that stuff people told us was true or not. And usually we begin to discover that there's more to me than that, a lot more to me than that. Might be undefinable, but it's still there. So I guess we come to the place, or I come to the place right now where I'm living in at least a couple of different worlds. I'm sitting here in a classroom at Unity on East Breckenridge, and we're discussing a book called The Book of Innocence. And then on another level, we are beings who are searching for or releasing old stuff and opening ourselves up to a deeper truth that we know is already there. And if you want to go a little bit further, right, we're all divine beings just hanging out with one another. There's nothing here to learn. It's done. But the interesting thing is that it takes a lot of work to get there. And sometimes I forget that I forget that that state of consciousness, that state of mind is available to me. I get lost in the shuffle, like I did this morning. This morning I was electronically challenged in a number of different ways. And so I became somebody who was electronically challenged. I wasn't a divine being anymore. I became somebody else. And then I started thinking, oh, what are people thinking about me because I screwed up? So I became somebody thinking about what I thought other people were thinking about me. You ever do that one? Here I am thinking about what I think other people might be thinking about me. Talk about being lost in an illusion. And yet here I am, here we are. So part of what's going on here with me anyway is I need to forgive myself for being a person who got lost into thinking about what other people might be thinking about me. Because if I was just somebody who was a thought form that was worried about or concerned about what I thought other people might be thinking about me, you probably wouldn't be here. I'm not going to listen to somebody who doesn't know who the hell he is. I'm not going to listen to somebody who's thinking about who he thinks somebody else might be thinking about him. Deep breath. What a lesson. Form itself, the book says, is elastic to thought. In other words, What you hold on is the unity principle. What you hold in mind produces in kind. The thought you're holding on to kind of influences the form that you are in, not just the physical body, but the essence of who you think you are. It's a last. It's not. It's changeable. So anything that you thought about yourself in the past, you can think. You can think, how can I see this differently? I can think differently. I'm not stuck with it. When you go higher in vibration, the idea of who you are is altered in many ways because you are no longer in a construct that is born of negation, of denial, the divine. I think that's one of the reasons why we're here to begin with, because we know we are not what we were told we were. And then how I think about myself or what form my thoughts take, I can choose. I can choose what influences me, what I hold as truth, or what I hold as my perception of truth. When you lift beyond that denial, the denial of your divinity, the denial of your oneness, when you lift beyond that denial, you become the true self or express as true self. And the mandate of form at this level of tone and vibration is that it aligns you through the next step, the next level of recognition, manifest the world as God. In other words, where do I go beyond my humanity? If I am the divine living in a world that is chaotic, how do I change that? Do I just say, oh, well, my divine self can't change that chaos? Or I say, wait a minute, I might be contributing to the chaos, to the anger, to the fear. Again, that wonderful metaphysical principle drives me nuts. You see it out there, it's happening in here. So, what can I do this morning? This moment to allow myself to heal. Or to be, maybe if you don't get involved in talking about it too much, what can I do to open myself up to the healing that already exists? Can I learn to be at peace with what is? Because what isn't necessarily just what's out there. What is also what's in here. So I am seeking, I am looking, I am searching, and sometimes I am forgetful, and sometimes I am lost. Can I forgive myself for all of that? Can I open myself up to that truth? Can I be gentle with myself? That's almost rule number one in terms of spiritual growth. Can I be gentle with myself? And if the answer is no, the next question is, well, how can I? So I begin to learn to let go of thoughts of separation, of guilt, fear, shame. It's one of the things I hear about people talking about unity all the time. I let go of my guilt and my shame and my fear. But then, of course, we created it again. Am I really a good unity person if I still have some guilt and fear and shame? Is there something wrong with me if I still have some guilt and fear and shame? See? So let's suppose I get sick. Oh, you must be holding on to a lot of anger. That's why you're sick. In other words, there's something wrong with you. No, what I'm being asked to do is, how can I heal? How can I let go of the idea of being sick? Because that's where it comes from in the beginning. How can I let go of the idea of being sick? How can I open myself to the idea of being well? Because that's where my truth is. Now, to understand what this means, is that yes, you align to the higher template, higher energy level, higher vibration. So you come walking in here on Sunday morning and you flip a little switch. Oh, higher vibration. I'm going to class right now. I'm going to be imbued with grace, with love, with peace, with joy, with understanding. So I flip the switch. And of course, I walk out the door and I flip the switch back again. Somebody's sitting in my seat. Somebody's in my way. Or maybe there's something wrong with me because I'm in my own way. So then I start becoming, as soon as I become judgmental about myself or anybody else, bam, I'm into separateness. I could be in a marvelous state of oneness, of unity, consciousness, and as soon as I make a judgment about myself or somebody else, bam, all of a sudden now it's me and me, it's us against them. Me against you. Can I be gentle with myself? Now, to understand what this means is that you align in a higher template, a recognition of what is always true as the body itself acclimates to a new recognition that is also not separate from God. Your perception of form itself is transformed. I am not separate from the divine. And because I am not separate from the divine, I am part of the divine. I am, the Course in Miracles says, I am an idea in the mind of God. And ideas do not leave their source. So no matter what I think is going on, no matter what thoughts I might get lost in, I am remain an idea in the mind of God. Wouldn't that be wonderful to think about that? And since I am an idea in the mind of God, so are you. I am an idea in the mind, a beautiful thought. There's no place to go. Now, you know what a chair is. You know what a cloud looks like. But the comprehension of chair and cloud, indeed altered in perception from a higher perspective of the upper room, is re-seen as what it has always been. An out-picturing of the divine, now known as chair, now known as cloud. And everything is an out-picturing of the divine and whatever label we might have put on it. That's fascinating to me. You can call it a chair, you can call it a cloud, you can call it anything you want to. The truth is, it is a unique expression of divine consciousness. What is there in your life right now that you recognize as being a unique expression of divine consciousness? Clothes you're wearing, the thoughts that brought you here this morning, the thoughts that you're thinking about what you're going to be thinking about when you leave here this morning. They are all an out-picturing or an outsourcing of divine consciousness. We are just not aware of that yet. Can I just be, for me anyway, it's a matter of being open to that, being aware of that as best I possibly can, and recognizing that I'm probably going to forget. I'm probably going to get lost in thought. I'm probably going to forget and get lost in forgetfulness, but I don't have to stay there. As soon as I realize I've gotten lost in judgment and separateness, I can change my mind. My emotions, my feelings, well, this is my experience anyway. My emotions and my feelings are not going to change as quickly as my thoughts. So I can change my thoughts almost immediately. But what's going to happen is that I'm going to think that my feelings should change as quickly as my thoughts. It takes a while for my feelings to catch up with my thoughts, mine anyway. So I can say, let me think thoughts of love and gratitude. And I can do that. But I might not be feeling it emotionally right away. It's going to take a while for that to happen. And I think sometimes we become a little bit lost in that. I do anyway. I think, without even thinking out loud too much, I think that my feelings should change as quickly as my thoughts. And they don't. Maybe yours do, but mine don't. Good question.
Jerry.
Hang on a second. Let me see if I can open myself up to a reflection.
Go into gratitude and wait for the rush of feeling, not saying faith, but just feeling the gratitude. I never know what's going to hit, but it's not.
It isn't instantaneous. And that's because feelings exist on a lower plane. Feelings exist on a heavier vibration. Feelings exist in terms of our lower self, our lower consciousness. It's not a bad thing, that's just where they live, right? And we're talking about when I change my thoughts, I'm changing to a higher consciousness. Where the thoughts exist of peace, of joy, of love, of grace, whatever it might happen to be. So those are changeable through the consciousness of my higher self. Feelings and emotions come from my, when I say lower consciousness, I don't mean that as a bad thing. They come from my limited consciousness. And because of that, it takes them a while to catch up to the higher self. In other words, however I want to put this. The stepwise process for me is as soon as I realize that first of all, I'm in a state of mind that is, let's say, lower vibration, negative energy. I realize I can think different. I can think different thoughts. So I start creating those different thoughts that I can think. Feelings are still there, still exist. Now, what I want to be able to do is not get lost in those feelings that haven't changed yet, but actually what I want to do is I want to bless them. I want to say thank you. Thank you. Thank you even for my negativity for waking me up. Thank you for my ungratitude. And once I bless those feelings, their grip on me begins to come a little bit loose. And when it becomes a little bit more loose, it becomes a little bit easier to change and to manifest in a different kind of way. That's the best I can do with that one. Jim.
Actually, it was me that spoke up.
Oh.
So, unless Jim wants to jump in with something, but I'm looking at this sentence is really challenging. Basically, our comprehension of anything that's going on, our understanding of it, is re-seen as it has always been, as an outpicturing of the divine. And so it talks about some pretty neutral things like chair and cloud, but I
Hang
think,
on a second, John.
okay.
You're okay, try it again.
Can you hear me now, Jerry?
Yeah.
Yeah, that did it.
Okay. So this whole sentence talking about changing our perceptions because we've gone to the level of the higher of the upper room, and now we see what is really there, an outpicturing of the divine. And it talks about some pretty neutral things like chair and cloud. But if we, some of the things that challenge me, I think about the challenge of, bombs falling on people, and I think about other things like that. I think about germs and disease. Those are challenges that I've seen recently. How do we? We can, and so I guess I'm looking at, although they don't always cause me to leave a place of peace, I'm not necessarily seeing them as an outpicturing or a manifestation of the divine. And so I could be confusing all kinds of ideas in here, but what are your thoughts on that?
How could I look at bombs falling on Iran being a blessing? All I can do with that one is go back to, instead of trying to change the external reality, which it is real to some extent, instead of trying to change that or doing so much work on that, I need to look at the violence and the anger and the fear that is going on inside of me. That's my classroom. That's my learning. Yeah, Don.
Yeah, I kind of think of it in terms of all the years, since I was born, there's been a game of shame and guilt that I've gone through. And I've developed so many mechanisms to protect it, protect me, that a lot of times that's where my mind goes to first. That's my first practice. Who I've been, what I've become, through that call. And then if I can take a breath, calm that down, then that's when things like empathy and compassion start to roll. And like the guy on my bumper, guy dropping whatever, I start to think to myself, I start to feel a little sorry. What has driven to that point of such atrocity and meanness? And I try to, like I say, have a little compassion for him. Know that I don't know what his story was, but I try to create a little opening in there for me to try to send some love, because I feel like he needs it. For him to be doing what he's doing, he needs it.
Right. My impression sometimes is, let's say if I'm driving and somebody zooms by me in an annoying kind of way. Right. Somehow or another, if somebody passes me up, I get annoyed. And the voice inside of me says, well, this guy or gal, whoever it might happen to be, all right, could be either running home to for a six pack or a sick child. I don't know. So what can I do to bless him or bless her, all right? On their way home, whatever their intention might happen to be, because I have no idea. But I do have an idea of how I look at them or how I think about them can change my vibration. And in a sense, changing my vibration changes their vibration. And we're not
Okay.
talking about being in la la land here, right? Because my smaller consciousness, my limited self says, oh, yeah, there you go. Yak, 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 yak. Back to the 60s, right? Back to drawing peace symbols in your book, right? Back to this, back to that, right? It's not about that at all. It's about how can I see this differently? Because right now I am stuck with the pictures I'm seeing on the news. Now I could say, well, don't watch the news anymore, but that's the ostrich way of doing things. That's burying my head in the sand. What do I need to do differently? Not just turn off the television. What do I need to do differently? How can I do that differently?
So that reminds me of the guy who came up, the guru, whatever he was, who did Ho'oponopono. And he talked about being at a workshop, and there was a break, and the guru, forgotten his name, but the guy he had learned it from, went up to his room and spent an hour up there. And so this writer had gone up to find him and tell him it was time to come back to the workshop where they were teaching Ho'oponopono. And he asked this guru what he'd been doing in that hour, thinking the guy was meditating all this time and what have you. The guy said, oh, I was watching the news. And he was shocked because all the terrible things that were on the news, right? And he said, well, why were you doing that? He said, so that I could do Ho'oponopono to change what's happening in the world. So it does start with us.
It does. Thank you for that, John. We'll elaborate on that story later. Yeah, Matt?
I think for me, and perhaps for others, the whole notion of divine order can sometimes be confused with God's will. That God willed the bombing, or that God willed this horrible thing would happen.
Hmm.
And for me, I don't know that God has any control or cares to have any control over the things that happen. For me, the divine order is what's inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
That was what God meant with divine order, that calling forth of how it is that I'm called for. That whatever it is that God put in me that makes me come to this flat, or makes me look with empathy to someone else, or that makes me want to be open to the experience of others,
mm-hmm.
that is what divine order is, and that trying to look for God in something that happens outside there is what we've been conditioned to
mm-hmm.
do.
Well, sort of God is a separate entity, right, which is not. I mean, our language is very limited when it comes to this, all right? When we say God's will, or what was the other word you used, Matt?
The divine order.
The divine order, okay. In essence, they're the same thing. We're not talking about, again, when we talk about God doing this or God doing that, it's not a force outside of ourselves. We are part of that. And because we are part of that, how we adapt, how we react, how we respond, right, is choice we make. I can choose to be in lower consciousness or higher consciousness. I can choose to see this, or I can choose to pray to see this in higher consciousness rather than lower. Lower consciousness will tell me, this is the way it looks, this is the way it's always been, this is what's going to happen, this is how it's going to continue to look. Higher consciousness says, no, that's not true, but here we are in the middle. Here I am with the kind of the old image of the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other, okay? Which again is a very human, very realistic lower self interpretation of the world in general, right? But then it comes to choice we make. Can I see this differently? And I have to be, personally, I just have to be open to the answer to that because I don't know. Right. So somebody could say to me, I mean, nobody said this to me this time around, but I can remember being at my mother's funeral. And any number of people would reflect with me, well, it was God's will. And in my mind, I said, that's bullshit. It's not God's will that I hurt so much. But I did get an answer to that prayer when I walked outside the funeral home that gray day in Brooklyn, my mom's funeral. Because they said, why do you make me hurt? Is my prayer to an outside God. And the answer came inside of me, very, very realistically and very true, that Jerry, you hurt because you chose to love. It's not a judgment. Your lovingness is a reflection, or your pain is a reflection of the depth of your love. Not a judgment. That's just the way things work on planet Earth, right? You love deeply, you lose deeply. I could say the same thing for what I'm going through right now. You love deeply, you lose deeply. Not a judgment. It's the way we respond one way or another. See, and I can compound that negatively by beating myself up or saying, yep, I don't know. I don't know how to do this because I've never done it before. So I open myself up to the power of the divine consciousness to lead me, as that wonderful Thomas Merton prayer, to lead me on the right road, though I may know nothing about
it. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I just wanted to just share just briefly. I kind of echo with what Matt said in terms of this, which has drawn me on this path, and being part of this container and other containers. And it's kind of interesting, or maybe ironic, because I'm in Southern California right now. I have been for a week or two, where I was first introduced to this that opened me up some 40, 45 years ago. And I say that because I feel then I was at maybe a toddler or elementary level. I mean, it resonated with me, but I didn't really understand it. And not that I got it, you know, but now it's beginning to parts of it's beginning to embody within me, recognizing, you know, when I'm in higher consciousness or lower consciousness, whatever the name I want to give that, and just pausing to be aware of that. And I told, you know, one of our other groups, like, that you know, my girlfriend had hip replacement about a week ago, and the first, maybe the second day, kind of getting her up to do some physical therapy or just a walk with the walker, the tone that came from me was less than encouraging. And so I reached out to a friend of mine who's a Unity minister and also a CSL minister. And the sage advice that he gave me, he just said, Jim, first take a breath and then be willing to put yourself in her situation. And then I guarantee what comes through when you're talking to her, when you're encouraging her, would be softer. And I have to remember that. And I, you know, because this what for me what I'm gleaning from this, or practicalities. How can I practice this? Am I willing to practice this? And you know what? And what is it that kind of is blocking me from practicing this? But thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Jim. Let's see what we're doing as far as time goes. Let me just finish this thought and we can do our meditation. Actually, this will be a bridge between this week and next week. Each of you before us has known form in prior incarnations, or better said, other incarnations than the one you sit in now. There is an aspect of you that truly knows that form is elastic, that consciousness dictates form. Consciousness dictates form. Consciousness dictates form. Consciousness dictates form, the material world, what I see, how I see it. The alignment in the upper room reclaims you beyond a kind of solidity. And we say a kind of intentionally. If you stub your toe, you will hurt your toe. That is non-negotiable. Okay, that happens. It'd be interesting, you stub your toe and some wise ass says, oh, that's just an illusion. Yeah, but it's my toe. And my toe still, is the fact that my toe hurts an illusion? That's an interesting one. I'm not going to answer that for you, right? Because I'm working on that one myself. If you stub your toe, you will hurt your toe. That's non-negotiable. But your comprehension of what the toe is, what the internal organs are, what the skin is, what every hair follicle is actually altered. How can I see this differently? I stub my toe, it hurts. What can I learn from this? Move the chair, move whatever you stubbed. I mean, that's possible. Is there a way of looking at physical hurt or physical pain in a higher form of consciousness? Is there a way of responding to physical pain or illness, even, right, in a way that we can learn in higher consciousness? I remember doing a funeral service for a friend of mine, and one of his kids, grown kids, came up to me and said, you know, I want to thank you for what you said. You know, what's interesting is that when my dad was having his heart attack, he said something to the effect of, ah, this is my ticket out of here. Not, oh, how horrible, how awful, this is terrible. What can I do? This is my ticket out. And he said that lovingly, without fear. This is my ticket out. A couple of days before Margot passed. She said to me, I'm dying, aren't I? I said, yes. I said, you're letting go of your body. And that's okay. She passed about 2 days later. I'm dying, aren't I? Didn't say that out of anger or fear, just recognition that my body or I am letting go of this physical form. And that's okay. How can I see this differently? I can look at death as being something wrong with me, or it's my ticket out of here. So I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down. You can get comfortable in your chair. If you can get comfortable in those chairs, do the best we can with that one. Close your eyes. Couple of deep breaths. Soften. Become aware of the rhythm of your breath. The beating of your heart. And get a sense that the rhythm of your breath and the beating of your heart goes beyond the physical plane. Because the rhythm of your breath and the beating of your heart is the rhythm of the universe. It flows. It flows. And you are part of that flow. And that includes your persona, your personality, your ego, your physical body, as well as your awareness that the truth of who you are goes beyond, far beyond the physical realm. And you can allow in these next few moments something in your life, whether it's an incident, internal or external, or a person in your life, but the question arises, how can I see this differently? Whatever that might happen to be, let go of your struggle around it. And simply allow yourself to be open to the answer to that question, how can I see this differently? And the answer doesn't have to come to you right away. It will come. The important thing is being open to receiving the energy or the vibration as an answer to that question. How can I see this differently? How can I see myself differently? How can I see myself beyond this physical plane? May all beings be at peace. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings remember who they are. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. And open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
See you guys.
Thanks, Jerry.
Have a good week, everybody. Peace.
Thank you, Jerry.
Peace.
Thanks, Jerry.
Love you all. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
See you guys.